doesn't matter. I'll concede it's something I swear by it. I'll give you something interesting.
Oh, it has been.
I read a... All right, I'll sum it up. We are now?
Yeah. We are.
All right. I was speaking before about my being growing up in the period of the abstract expressionists, the recognition of these artists, the rough times we had in getting recognition. I'll even go further. I'll never forget going to Dave Thompson, the famous collector here in Pittsburgh, and saying, Dave, there's a painting here that we really should get for the collection, but nobody will give us a cent for it. And it's expensive, it's $2,000. Well, those days, $2,000 more than it is now. And Dave thought about it for a while and said, all right, I'll buy it for you. And that's how we got Woman Number 6 by de Kooning, which is now worth, I would say, about $10 million. We also got a painting, because I'd asked Dave if he would help us find somebody to buy it, which was only $600. I think it probably was $900. And Dave went to a man named Kaplan, Frank Kaplan.
Frank Horace Kaplan, the attorney.
He was the father of Irv Kaplan.
Yes.
Yeah. Went to him and said, look, the museum needs $900, and we do business. So, and he very readily forked over the $900 without seeing the work. And for years, unfortunately, died before the work got its recognition. He was teased about buying that crazy work by Jackson Pollock.
Oh, that long?
Can you imagine that? So that's the way, as I think back of all these things, all these fights, all these, in a way, I wish we were all over again, do it all over again. Reason? Because you were constantly on your toes. You were fighting for a cause. It was a wonderful experience. It was a great experience. Yes. There are times when you wanted to weep because what it did in a way of destructiveness to artists and so forth. It's horrifying. And yet, today, this, what bothers me more is that it's all accepted. There's no longer any avant-garde. Avant-gardism today is more sex in your picture.
Yeah.
It's like, what's his name, the sculptor in New York.
What?
Well, I don't mind. He's not a bad photographer.
No, you're right.
But I do object to this, heavens. He does these little pigs and stuff like that, blows them up, all the kitsch, blows them up. He just had an exhibition. He married a woman who is one of the only woman, I think, in the Italian... Congress or whatever they call it there. She's the only congressional member, and she is known as the pornographic queen. And this is what's been coming out of his painting and stuff. But he sells. In fact, there's a very wealthy Pittsburgher here who bought one. And as my old teacher used to say, he deserves it. All right.
It's very beginning when you're talking about abstract expressionism, you use the word that garbage. You didn't mean that.
No, no, I'm saying people call it garbage.
Oh, okay, all right,
I
all right.
Call it.
No.
That
was the word that
no.
came out. Am I no, hearing it wrong?
Kind of people
all right.
I meant others did.
All right.
Look, I'll never forget a wonderful incident. Yeah, everybody's dead involved in this. I can tell it very easily. The president of Carnegie Institute at that time was Bovard, James Bovard. And Bovard had a peculiar sort of thing. He hated nudity in any form. I don't quite understand, because I understand he's quite a rake as a young man. But that's one of the things. He objected every time he bought a new picture. And it never occurs to me that some of these pictures are nude, you know. It's very funny. At any rate, one day, I got a letter from him, a note from him, which was attached to an article, and a note from Sam Casey, father, the Casey Construction, you know, and all that. Was one of the wealthy Pittsburghers on my board. And he had written about an article that appeared in the Times. Oh, what's his name? This man, Yves Klein, the French artist, who had his nude models lie in paint pools and then roll on canvas. Now, I have to tell you something. If you could see any nudity on that canvas, you'd be remarkable. Yeah, I don't... to me, it was very... he may have had fun, I don't know. But that's beside the point. The point of the whole thing was Sam Casey had written to Bavard saying, "Jim, I hope we're not going to have any of this in the International." And Bavard had bucked the whole thing to me. And I still have it somewhere. And I every time I run into it, I laugh like mad. But it wasn't laughing then. It was terrible. You had to realize every single thing you did was being observed. And you were being criticized. Many of the critics introduced themselves at times. Many of them did. There was a gal, I'm trying to think of her name, she's dead now. Was she on the Herald Tribune? For the moment, I can't think of it. Who would always damn any modern. And 10 or 15 years later, when he gained fame, would always claim that she recognized him first.
She did.
Very amusing all the way through.
In the negative.
I think it's that she caught up with herself. At any rate, that's the story there.
What was the name of the artist, French artist?
French
Klein.
Y-V-E-S Klein, K-L-I-N-E. Not to be confused with the American Franz Klein.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Since you are mentioning this business of filmography and all, I'd like to come back to the International.
Yeah.
I know the International is mandated.
You know that what?
The International is mandated.
It is not mandated.
No.
The International is an idea, either from directly or somebody put it in his mind, from Andrew Carnegie. I should say Carnegie. He thought it was a good idea, and actually for its time it was brilliant. The idea of the International was that we would bring over the very best of Europe's art, contemporary art, and it would be shown here. It would be seen primarily by American artists who would learn a great deal from it. And there would be a greater interchange of art. This is, don't forget, starting in 1896. The world is quite different. Today, an artist produces a picture in Timbuktu, gets it photographed, it's still wet. And the next week it's reproduced in some magazine. We have no longer have this cultural lag, or this it's not a cultural lag actually, it's a lag of communications. But anyway, for its time was a brilliant idea. There are a lot of things about it that I objected to. I always objected to prizes. Let's take a good example of that, the very first Pittsburgh International. It contained the following. It contained paintings by Monet. It actually had a Manet, though he was dead. Renoir, Degas, Pissarro, Magritte. I go on. Every significant artist of the time, except, yes, who is going to find Cézanne was having a hell of a time down and around Aix-en-Provence, leaving his pictures out in the field for him, because nobody gave a darn. Or who's going to find Toulouse-Lautrec? Or people like certain artists were not considered. Nevertheless, the number of people, including Americans, they included Ryder, who I consider probably one of the greatest artists we ever produced in this country, R-Y-D-E-R. It produced all of these people. Whistler was in the show. Stacks of people whom we no longer know. Now, when you take all this list and I ask you, who is the greatest artist, I'd shudder if I had to make the decision. And they picked him. Sir John Lavery.
Mm-hmm.
Good question. Precisely that. Who is John Lavery? Believe it or not, in the last year, I've come across two Lavery paintings. The one was at auction, and somebody else used it for an illustration, another picture by him. He was a straight British academic, a portraitist, and this sort of thing. Totally uninteresting. The question is, but the interesting part is, who was the greatest artist? Frankly, it's a ridiculous question. It's like saying, what is better, apples, pears, or tangerines? You take your pick.
Take them all.
And they were giving prizes.
You can buy them all.
And they were giving prizes.
No, but only one got, right, Sir John Lavery won the prize. You see what I'm getting at? Years later, when I came aboard here, I'd always heard this phrase constantly used. People always said that if only we had bought all the first prize winners, what a collection we'd have. Well, I actually got to work and looked them all up. We'd have had a more contemptible collection we had. I came here. There are several that were very good, but the best ones that we did get, we have a little painting by Sisley here, which is probably the most beautiful Sisley ever painted. I don't know how we ever came into the collection. It was bought by a trustee. I don't know how, why, or any other reason. How did that one escape and get taken in? Because look at all the things they let go.
Is that the lovely trees?
It's got a stream. It's a beautiful painting. I think it's the greatest of the Sisley's. And there are several things that were acquired during that time through the International. There was a great one that got away, the Yellow Tablecloth by George Brock. There are others that, but by the way, you know, the old king never got a prize. So it didn't come into the collection through prizes. Many of the prize pictures are still down in the basement.
Let me ask you another question. So the International has been continuing.
Well, here's my objection to the International. And by the way, you know, I stopped the International. You know that from 1970 until 1980, I don't know what the next one was, 81, 82, or 83, I was no longer with the museum. I retired by then. There was no International. There were two shows that I put on that I wanted to replace the International with. I'll get into that. My feeling about the International was that this had long outlived its purpose. And by the way, most of the critics, the major critics, had agreed on this. they all, the same groan would go up every time we ran it, every 3 years. They objected to this. And quite frankly, the internationals were, I followed it to its point. I went out and got the greatest artists of our time. Yes, Picasso always appeared as long as he was alive. And why not? Mm-hmm. Certainly he was one of the great, greatest artists of our times. And I picked what I felt was the best. What's happened since, and in fact all these internationals abroad and every place else no longer follows that best idea. They're trying to show interesting thing that's being painted today. Well, it's not what I call an international, you see. Number two, these shows were becoming more and more astronomical in price. Had we spent the money that it cost us to assemble them, we could have bought half the show. And I think the dominant thing I've worked on all these years was to build up the collection. I'll come to that later.
Speaking of which, can we make another date?
Yes, I'll speak about it next. The point here is the international, with its prize structure, and by the way, once the prize were announced, it was a good way of getting publicity. But after that, it dropped.
Did you get extra support for the museum? Did you get extra support for the museum because of the international?
Did we get extra support?
Was it prestigious enough?
We got. We always had a grant from the A.W. Mellon Educational Charitable Trust for the international. But nobody else came across. Later on, I began going to foreign governments, getting them to concede certain things like shipping paintings in their ships free of charge or their airlines. Things of this nature, which meant a great deal to us because that's quite a bit of saving. But frankly, the only support we got directly was A.W. Mellon. And that was just because, well, it was part of the tradition, that's all.
Was anything ever done, Mr. Marcus, when you had your international, you had artists that you thought were good, was anything ever done to follow up on any of these artists?
Well, yes, most of these, the good artists have all gone on to become famous and the bad ones have all dropped.
That happens
all the time.
But
I'm very curious to know what's going to happen to the last international event.
Talk about it.
All I can say is, I do not understand pursuing an idea that is so bad.
Pursuing it is so bad. Actually, a lot of people don't think it's bad. I can't answer some of these things. I know. There's not that much money.
No, that goes in to producing an international.
I think the most expensive show I ever put on, an international, was still under $225,000. Today, I want to tell you, they're not 1 million. They're way, way in excess. I don't know how many million.
My concern is
it's absurdity.
There are many good shows, many good exhibitions that come into the country.
One.
Boston Museum of Fine Arts has them. Cleveland has them.
I just went and saw the Picasso show.
Yeah.
Very good show.
Very good.
Excellent. Very bad collection, actually, the more I looked at it.
Like their museum, the Picasso Museum in Paris, I think has the worst paintings of Picasso Museum in Paris.
I disagree with you there.
I think it's very bad.
I thought it was one of the great museums. I really mean this. I do feel that's very important. I felt, on the other hand, that the, the new museum. It was a railroad station.
The
Gara. Anyway, I thought that was a monster.
It is.
To have done that to the poor, what used to be the Judapam,
yes.
To have done that to all of this is cruel, and it's academic. When I use that word academic, that's a slur. I mean by this, this is somebody who's got a constipated mind, which is devoted to book knowledge and cannot see. Seeing is more than just visible images. It's more, it's perception. And that's part of art. It's the most important part.
In your notes from the past, you said that the greatest thing you learned from Stephen
Bourgeois
was that you learned how to look at art, how
yes.
to see.
And to this day, I can't tell you what it is. Actually, Gordon Washburn, who was here as a director, brought me here. Also, we used to talk about this phenomenon. I don't know. I can't explain what it is. There's something about art which either is alive or it's dead, and it's dead than a doornail. There have been times when I've checked. Look, the thing that is so wonderful about art is that you're constantly changing your mind. You never. But you can be pretty vehement about your likes and dislikes. But thank God you changed. I never forget as a kid, I disliked Leger. Today I think he's one of the greatest artists that ever lived. And you see how things change constantly. And even among the contemporaries today, is quite a few of them, I've taken a much different attitude. Why? Well, there's something in his art that I perceive as having meaning and exciting to me. It is an excitement, by the way, of the eye. It's not knowledge in the common sense. It's knowledge in, I don't know, how do you learn anything and what makes music good? Same question.
It's an instinctive reaction.
It's just quite wealthy, that's all.
Your reaction.
That's right. Now,
well, your question, though, to go back to it.
I just want to say, there are a lot of reasons why I objected to the international. I felt much more could be done. And so I put on a series called the International Series. It was called the Pittsburgh International Series. My idea was a little bit complicated, but I'll explain it as best I can, quickly. My idea was to show 1, 2, 3, 4 artists at a time. These would be men who were at least of maturity, who had earned a place, and we had a right to see them at some sort of depth. We could see them 20, 30, 40 artists, pictures, and to see how they see the man. Rather than, I'll never forget one international where Gordon Washburn put it on. He brought an Italian artist named Dova, D-O-V-A. It was a beautiful painting. I got very excited. I'll never forget, when I next went to Italy, I went to see Dova intentionally. Where Gordon had gotten that one picture, I don't know, because all the rest of them were terrible. He picked the only good thing he ever did. I resented going all the way to this town where he was, when I should have known in advance that he'd be that bad. But this told me something. It told me that we should see an artist with greater depth. I also wanted the city to feel the artist. I wanted them here. I wanted them to talk, and for people to comprehend that behind these works there's a living human being. I also felt very strongly that if you were to show such artists, not every 3 years as the international, but every 2 years, we could put on these exhibitions, they'd be considerably cheaper. And we could not only see artists, but I think the people would be able to grasp and understand more. Instead, they go starry-eyed through these shows. They don't know what in the world they're seeing. And I'm sorry, but I feel they're a waste of time. I'm speaking to the internationals in a lot of ways. Unless you are capable of taking this sort of an exhibition, it's ridiculous to send 10 million school children through that show.
It was dreadful.
And to have an instructor say, you see, what's that man doing over there?
You know, when you have docents interpreting what his intent is, and you can't see it no matter how you look.
We went three different times with three different docents. That was very interesting.
The present, the last show was put on by a man I respect tremendously. He's a young chap here, an Englishman, who I think did a very good job. And here's something where I don't comprehend the selections. Do you see? But that's not it's not his fault, it's maybe mine. My only point is this. My attitude towards an international is much different than his. So I say, look, he's not creating an international, he's creating an exhibition of perhaps people worth looking at today. I mean, I'm putting it in a very nice broad term. I'm always glad to see new people. And by the way, these are not new. Many of them have been shown endlessly in New York and so forth. But a lot of them were very kitschy. And I don't... I know the role of what's happening here. I just had a long chat. You see, one of the nice things that's happened to me is that our kids come up, artists, and they come here and they talk. They've got to get things off their chest. I say nice because, first of all, I find it very exciting to speak very seriously to people, and especially to artists, who have a language of their own. And they need to get this stuff off. Most of them don't know where they're going anymore. It's reached a point where I can only tell an artist, for heaven's sakes, go find a wooden a log cabin and live there. Get away from the whole society, because you're living in a world today that's completely dominated by the most awful factors I know of. Your art will reflect it. You're living in a world completely dominated by public relations, by greed, by everything conceivable. And if you want to create, how can you create in this world? I don't know. I really don't know. That's another issue. My series shows, I had two of them. The first one was a solo show. My trustees thought that I was doing something very daring, and they wanted to save me. They almost destroyed me. They said, why don't you get a jury to help pick your artist? I had a whole idea in mind. They destroyed that. And so I had to abide by a jury, which I picked. But while I don't mind the artists they picked, they were not the way I would do it if I had free hand. The first show was a complete one-man show devoted to Pierre Alashinsky. By the way, again, one of those Europeans is not showing in America. Oh, he shows now. He got a gallery, Emmerich Gallery in New York. And I'm sort of astounded to find that a little watercolor there is now selling for $60,000. That's fine. But he's got an enormous show right now in Paris. I don't know, is it in the Grand Palais or is it the Petit Palais? I don't know. Anyway, I mean, Europe's quite the thing. All right. It was a very exciting show. Then the second show is divided by two people, Chilita and de Kooning. Now you see, why did I pick de Kooning, or why did they? He was an old man. Very interesting point. Because of the world today, artists, while they gain respect and a certain status, the moment their prices go up, which dealers will do automatically. And by the way, this is all being perpetrated by the very person, the same person, the collector. He's now made his work that he bought earlier for, say, $30,000 is now worth $300,000. He wants new talent so he can get something cheap again. And what happens to new courses, the dealer finds that he can't sell these things by the old artist. And so they go off into a sort of a never-never land. Look at all the people that, in the end, never sold pictures. Robert Motherwell. I just take the whole list of them. All of these were the outstanding artists of our time. They sold paintings, but never in quantity. Now that they're dead, they're selling like mad. You see. But by their last years, nothing. And so this went on, and so there was this constant looking for new talent to sell to collectors. I wanted to overcome this in my own way, but I keep establishing the fact that we have a great artist, and damn it, all he deserves is day in the sun, is time, and it's arrived. He deserves this. We have a truly great artist, Richard Diebenkorn, out on the West Coast. Of course he pulls enormous prices. A major picture, I won't pull about 3/4 of a million. But he still is worth it. I'm very proud.